Welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content and word pronunciation is simply the opinion of the hosts and their guests.
Well, I like guns and I love being free. Because I'm armed, you can't take that from me and you should know it.
Welcome to episode 147 of New Shooter Canada. Tonight we have George.
Hello.
Thomas.
Hello.
And me, Benny.
Hello, Benny.
Hi, everybody. George, what did you do this week in this week? Because I already know you did nothing in guns.
Not yet.
I didn't get out shooting. Actually, I didn't do anything in guns. Well, I edited episode 146, so if it sounded horrible, blame Thomas. It's his fault. I started out the week without a boat, and I finished the week with a boat. I've been kind of watching Kijiji just to see what's popping up on the sailboat scene, because I was thinking about getting one next year. And lo and behold, one pops up, I think it was Tuesday. Pops up for free. I'm like, so I messaged the guy, and I'm like, okay, what's up with the free boat? Kind of like, why is it free? And his response was, because I got it for free. And I'm like, something's not sounding right here. So after some meeting them and seeing the boat, and kind of went to the marina, talked to the guy. And the guy at the marina's like, oh, sailboats, you can't sell those. You basically got to give them away for free. I'm like, well, how about that? Because that's what's happening. So that made me feel a little bit better about my quote-unquote free sailboat. And whatnot. So, you know, the guy got it for free. He was hoping that his kids would take an interest in it. They didn't, and it's been sitting in at the dock all year, not being used. So he finally decided to cut his losses and give it away. So
the amount of money that you paid to have it lift, have it stored for the winter, and your mooring fees for the season would have built you a nice AR.
I haven't paid for anything yet.
But yes. George, you still haven't finished your AR, which I'll have you know, I received parts for mine. So mine's getting you're gonna start dragging soon behind, because
soon
he's
been dragging for 2 years.
Well, it's yeah, but three. he's been ahead of me till now. He's still ahead of me technically, even though I haven't.
Well, when do we have Trevor on the show who gave you step by step instructions how to get all your parts kit in your lower?
I'll tell you now.
That was almost at least 2 years ago.
Yeah, 2 or 3 years ago now.
And how long have you been building your AR, Benny?
Probably after last year's charity shoot.
It's a little over a year.
Yeah, probably, because I picked up my lower when When Kevin was offering an Omni lower for really cheap. That's what I'm building my first AR on.
Plus, you got a Tavor. And during that time, too. So you got a complete rifle within that time frame.
Right. But, you know, George has how many? George has more guns. I think George has more guns than I do right now.
Probably.
Let's see. You got a bolt action shotgun. You've got the Pink Pumping. 22.
Oh, him.
Yeah. Do we really need to do an inventory of all my guns on the show?
It's a short list. Okay. So continue, Benny.
Yeah. So, well, that's that. That's all.
Well, but I'm not done yet.
Okay, keep going then.
Keep going.
Okay, I'm done.
Thomas, what did you do this week in guns?
I made it to the range with Benny and his dad, Stan, and we played with the Tavor. I still haven't actually shot the Tavor. I took lots of footage of it.
And I
watched Benny shoot it a lot, and I did all the filming for him, but I never did actually shoot it. And it was funny. When we were going to go up, I have a Predator rest, and I can't find it. And then I remember a couple of months ago seeing a sign that somebody had left a Predator rest at the range, and dawned on me, that must be mine because mine isn't here. So somebody must have found one and left it at the range. So I spoke to the club president, and yes, somebody found my Predator rest that I left up at the range 6 months ago. So I'll pick that up. And I've been working on the BL-22. I've been trying to find optics for it because the rifle's so light. It's like 5/16 of a pound or 2.3 kilos. It was really, really light. So I was looking for optics that were light as well. So I went over to sales on Saturday, and I wanted some cheap aluminum groove receiver rings, because the gun's not drilled and tapped, it just has a groove receiver. And John sells me a pair of solid steel, hunking huge Weaver rings that cost me like almost $50 with tax, which kind of ticked me off. I didn't want to spend that much, and I definitely didn't want steel rings. So I figured, okay. So I bought a Hawk 2x7, an illuminated reticle with mil dots, and it's a 32 ocular, the front lens is 32, because I wanted something small and light. So I wanted to get the rings. So when I put the scope on the rings that I got from sales, they were too low. And I told him, I said, look, I want high rings. And John said, no, you'll get away with medium rings. I said, no, I really think I need high rings. No, you need medium rings. So I took it home. I need high rings. It wouldn't fit. So I got kind of ticked off at that. So the next day, I go back to sales, and I go to the return desk, and I give her back the rings. I said, okay, I need to get something a little bit higher. I go back up, and I speak to John. I said, okay, I need some high rings this time. Then he brings out a pair of cheap Simmons high rings rated up to 44 size front lens for like $12. I said, well, why didn't you give them to me yesterday? And then he brought out a pair of the original rings that he sold me yesterday, and he brought out a pair of adapters, two-piece adapters, so you can run you can turn your groove receiver into a Weaver mount. Figure, okay, I said, I'll take the Simmons and give me the adapters, because they'll come in handy down the road, because when I tried to find them last year for my Marlin, I couldn't find those stupid things, and they're only $11. He said, okay. So they put them in a green bag, and you got to go downstairs, take it back to customer services. I said, okay, and I'm expecting to get at least $15 change. And she goes, so you owe me $22. I said, what do you mean I owe you $22? She pulls the stuff out of the bag. He put the exact same rings in that I returned yesterday, and he left the ones that I wanted upstairs. I said, no. He put the wrong rings in. So I had to go back upstairs. And, you know, they were there. I got him back. But then I had to wait up another 15 minutes in customer service for my lineup. So I finally got home. I put the bottom bases on. I put the scope on, and it's still hitting the front sight. And I didn't want to take off the first time it was hitting the barrel. This time it was hitting the front sight. I'm like, oh, man, I really don't want it to be hitting the front sight. So if you're okay, I'll put the adapter pieces on. And I did have some regular Weaver bases. So I put the whole thing on together with the regular Weaver bases. And it looks stupid because I have these two screws resting on top of the receiver, putting a base. And then I have these other rings on top of that. And it brought the scope up so high, my cheek weld was off. And it just looked stupid. So I said, screw it. I took it all off. I said, okay, I might as well just take off the front sight. And I didn't want to. So I went downstairs. I got my tap. I read my manual. And it said to use it said to use either plastic or wooden dowel rod to tap out the sights. No problem. I've got both. I was hitting that sucker as hard as I could. It wouldn't budge. It just wouldn't budge. I'm getting so ticked off. So I go outside, have a cigarette, calm down, because I want to get this thing done, and I wanted to go to the range and want to go shooting. So I came in, I put it back on, and I'm looking at it, and I realize, oh, if I just take out the leaf, I might have enough room. And there's a small pin that holds the rear leaf into place, so I could take that out and still leave the base for the rear sight in. So I don't have any punches that's actually that small for that pin. So I took one of my punches, went out the garage, took my little Dremel tool, and I grounded it right down. So I had a nice, perfect size punch to take out the pin. Worked beautifully. Pin came right out, put the scope on, sat on perfectly. Figured, oh, great, this is excellent. So I start getting it balanced up and everything. And I put my rings on. I'm just about to tighten, balance. Everything interior goes, what are you doing? So now I'm going to get this set up to go to the range, because you remember that we have dinner reservations today, right? I'm like, oh, yeah. I didn't forget. It's our anniversary, right? Yeah, it's our anniversary. No, I didn't forget. And I did forget, because I bought her flowers and everything yesterday, not realizing that today's the actual anniversary, and I gave her all the stuff yesterday. So I forgot too many dinner reservations or everything. So I got all this stuff all ready to go. I've got all the Loctite on the screws, the scope, everything. Damn. So I had to put everything down. I just left all that stuff, put the gun back in the safe, came home, got the rings on, tightened it up, and then I realized when I first got it home, I couldn't get the cover off for the battery for the illuminated reticle. I couldn't budge it. My buddy Russ couldn't budge it. I took it across the street. My friend Randy, who's a big muscular guy, he could do it. He couldn't budge it. So I had to take a pair of pliers and hold the pliers to the base and a pair of pliers to the cap, and I knew I would mar it doing it, and sure enough I did. You can see the marks from the pliers, but I got it off. So then I took the old battery. I guess they'd put the battery in and turned it on. It had been left on the whole time. And I always keep a stack of those 2032 button cell batteries because all my red dots take them. So I got it in. Thing works beautiful. I love the rectangle. I can run it green or I can run it black. So especially like when I was running when I was using Stan's 22 on Friday, and he's got the adjustments for the different windage. On a black target, you cannot see that black nail dot. You can't see your point of aim because it's black. This thing's perfect because I can make it red or green, and it'll show up on the black. So finally, I got it on. I got it leveled. I tightened it up, and I looked at my watch, and it's like 10 to 8, and I had to come and record. So when we're done, I'm going shooting.
Oh, right. You can do that at your range.
Yeah. Oh, another thing, too. I was speaking to Russell, the guy that I sold. You guys might have met Russell. He came out to the charity shoot in Kingston last year with us, my friend Bruce's brother. I sold him my Arsenal Strike 1. So, of course, you got we did the transfer, and the CFO said, no, you don't need an ATT to go pick it up. It's included. And what he did, he missed the deadline for renewing it at Silverdale this year, so he can't reapply until January because they're not accepting applications right now. But you can still go as a guest, right? You can still go as somebody off the street and a paying member of the public. So he figured, I can steal that. I can pay the $20. So he emails them first and asks them. And they say, no, that you have to belong to a club because you have to know that you've taken the club level safety course. Well, he belonged to Silverdale. He took this club level safety course, and they said no, they wouldn't let him come shoot because he didn't belong to another club. And they said it was illegal for him to bring his guns to the range without an ATT. And I'm like, no, it's not.
There's no
your ATT.
Yeah, your ATT's still your there.
It's still there. It's still included in your license to and from an approved range. So I figured what he should have done is actually just called and spoke to Joan. But yeah. I don't know who he emailed with, but maybe he wasn't clear. But when he's telling us, no. You've already taken the course, and they taught you the course, so they know you're qualified. You're just coming back as a qualified shooter until you can reapply in January. So he was a little upset about that. So I said, well, you know, he's coming back out in a couple of weeks. What I did is I gave him the he paid me half of the money for the gun. And I said, when you have the money, because he's not making a lot of money right now, I said, he said, I'll give you the rest of the money in a month. I said, well, fine. I'll come back in 2-3 weeks for next month, and we'll go up to my range and shoot it. So, but I thought it was kind of funny. I'd like to know who he spoke to at Silverdale.
You know what? I would have just responded. Like, if he spoke to you, I would have emailed back now and said, excuse me, I don't know where you're getting your information from, but it's incorrect.
Yeah.
According to your – I've taken the safety course with your range, and just because I let my membership lapse doesn't mean I can't come to your range anymore, if those are the rules.
Exactly.
So
maybe what he should have done is actually just telephone and spoke to somebody instead of it might have been a miscommunication on his part. I don't know. Yeah. But I was surprised when he told me.
Yep.
Well, so about you, Benny, what you do with guns this week?
I did not get turned away by Silverdale this week. No, I just didn't even go because it's an hour and a half away and he needs that headache sometimes. I went with Thomas on Friday to his range, and we tested all the muzzle brakes that I got. I ended up ordering, four crush washers, thinking that I would use a bunch, but it doesn't look like you really need to use them with a Tavor, and you definitely don't need them if you're just testing muzzle devices, as in when you're just testing them, putting it on, shooting a couple times, and taking it off again. If you're shooting extensively, then you probably should use some kind of crush washer or really tighten it on properly. I did not. Do that. I ended up just tightening it almost hand tight and tried to orient it properly. It does have a timing washer. The Tavor does have a timing washer on it, so you do get it, should get it properly timed, but whatever. I wasn't going to sit there with, I only had one wrench. I didn't have two wrenches, so I couldn't really get it down tight anyways, and I was just taking about 5 shots most with each break, so It was interesting results. We'll have to get that. I'll have to edit the video that Thomas took with me. Thanks for that again, Thomas.
Oh, you're welcome.
Just get that all that information down in an Excel sheet or something, and show like have all the numbers and everything. I deprimed approximately 150 cases of 223, and I signed up for a match on September 10th in Barrie. So, a pistol. What's it called? Outlaw.
Outlaw pistol. Service match.
Yeah, So that'll be fun. And that's what I did this week in Guns.
You know what, too? Our club has a rule that after you go to the club three times, you have to make application for membership. So you can still come again. Yeah, which you got, what you did, though, right? So you can still come up with me because you've actually made an application to join, you can still keep coming. The rule just says after three times, you have to make application for membership. So you have.
Yeah, and so I think you that can was the third time.
Yeah. Awesome. And same with your dad. So you can still come again with me because you put the application in. And actually, I was speaking to Gary. He said 45 people have already applied.
Yeah, and like you said, I wonder how many of those people are just changing clubs or how many people are brand new.
Yeah, I think in the past, they like to take a certain percentage that have actually already trained. I think last year they took 6 that were already trained and they took 10 that were newbies.
Well, I would love to make it to your range because I think they'd be a lot more open to having someone give courses, and they have the space and the time for someone to give courses at the range.
Yeah, Silverdale's always so busy.
Yeah, yeah. Trying to find time for – I was trying to arrange for Ragnarok to go to Silverdale, and they were just speak to us in January, not before then. So, yep, we'll see where that goes.
Well, hopefully it's hard getting into any range right now. Yep. It is lucky enough that we do have 3 ranges opening up this way, so that's one good thing at least.
Yep. Okay. What guns in the news, Thomas? What's the first story?
First story is actually from the firearms blog. Ruger reports large earning drop for second quarter, and this is by Rick R. I actually edited it a little bit. I just took some of his opinions out and just put the actual facts in. Ruger recently announced that they have experienced a reasonably significant earnings drop for the second quarter of 2017, translating to smaller payouts for stockholders, reporting only $299.2 million in net sales this quarter. Ruger did not come close to the same period of 2016, where the reported net sales were $341.1 million. Ruger's Chief Executive Officer Christopher J. Kilroy stated that 29% of Ruger's firearms sold were the new Mark IV pistols, the precision rifle, and the LCP2 pistols. The reasonably stagnant AR-15 market is no doubt hurting not only retailers but also manufacturers who were selling huge numbers of Americans' most popular rifle. Further complicating things, NICS, the National Incident Criminal Background Check System, saw a 7% decrease in overall volume when compared to the second quarter of 2016. Another factor in the earnings drop is a voluntary recall on the Ruger Mark IV pistols that is expected to cost the company $2.5 million, which is good because there wasn't actually an incident. They did it on their own, so it's nice to see them recall something that they hadn't actually had a failure or a complaint or a problem. They saw a problem in the design and they fixed it. My own personal opinion is that you don't need to be a top financial whiz to figure out that the decline in sales is probably due to who's currently in the White House. If the Clintons were elected, we would have seen a similar sales spike that we saw when Obama was elected. I think people were stocking up and the market stabilized a bit. And once they got Trump elected, you know, people weren't worried. They weren't stocking up in ARs and parts and stuff. So I think it's who's in the White House really had a big effect on the huge economy in the United States. It's a massive billion-dollar industry, especially the ARs. It's like the Canadian economy or the Canadian market is just a pittance compared to what the U.S. gun market is.
Right, but like you said, Thomas, this story, like this is a bad for Ruger, but them coming forward with both the Ruger Precision and the Mark IV before anyone said anything inclines me to go to buy Ruger in the future just because there's a problem with their product. Unlike other companies who in the very recent past have, you know, according to the tests, quote unquote, I'm using air quotes now, no one can see me, you know, they passed the test, but the fact is they still had a liability issue that they ignored. So the fact that Ruger's coming forward and saying, hey, we think there might be a problem here, stop what you're doing, send us your guns, we're going to fix them and send them back to you kind of thing, I think definitely is a good thing for Ruger for the future. For future sales, so I'm definitely going to buy Ruger in the future if I have an option.
I've had nothing but great customer service. I bought a Ruger bolt action 22 Magnum rifle a few years ago, And there was no, it's supposed to come with rings, and there's no rings in the box. And I called Ruger, and they apologized. This real sweet lady on the phone said, "Don't worry, honey, I'll put them in the mail right now." I said, "You should get them in a couple of days." And I got them in 2 or 3 days. Oh, so wow. I've had nothing but great service. I had a bad Ruger P94 with a bad barrel. I sent it down to them. And the service technician from their repair center called me. He goes, "You're right. It is a bad barrel. We apologize. We'll send you the barrel. Actually, we'll send the barrel to the gunsmith, send the gun out there, and we'll have the barrel up to you as within this week." And they did. So you like dealing with companies like that.
Yep. That definitely is a positive. Like, apparently, early on, they were very I don't know how to put it, but let's say tactical. Like, for the longest time, I forget who, but like the guy whose last name was Ruger, running the company, was very anti, large capacity magazines and all that jazz.
I don't think that was all. I think a lot of that's misconstrued. But that was all that was happening when the Clinton's assault weapons ban was coming out.
Right. But so I'm saying.
So instead of banning things, well, no, he wasn't. That's a misconception. Instead of banning things and saying, "Let's get rid of the gun," Bill Ruger said, "Well, why don't we just limit the magazines to 10? He offered another solution. So a lot of people think that he was for it, and technically he wasn't. He didn't want to see guns get banned. So he suggested that as an alternative to go other things that were coming.
Right, right. So,
but from what I understand, because I've heard people say what you said, and I heard other people say, no, he actually, it was when the assault weapons ban was going on, and he suggested it as an alternative. Well, if we do this, then you don't have to ban that.
Right, right. So what I was going to say was in recent years, though, Ruger has very much turned towards supporting, not support, but going away from that line of thinking, as in, well, we're now going to go full on, now Ruger has their AR-15 and their tactical precision rifle, which looks really cool, and I need to get my hands on one of those soon.
It was funny. The first AR was actually a gas operated system, and the only problem with that, it's proprietary. So if you have a part fail and you're in a match or something, you're screwed, because nobody else is going to have that part. You have to get it from Ruger. And then recently they just started coming out with a mil-spec AR that it was straight blowback. So they're right in there with everybody else now producing competition ARs. So
right, and then they did striker fire handguns, and they're more mainstream now, opposed to
big,
Hunter.
Big time.
Yeah, but yeah, buy Ruger, they're cool. Now Ruger, send us some guns to T&E for you.
They actually came out with a couple of weeks ago. I was talking about the Remington 1911 in 10mm. Ruger just announced that they're doing their SR19 also in 10mm. So they're putting out some nice toys to really keep in the competition.
Yep, you don't hear anyone really complaining of Ruger, and they have the 10/22 to stand behind. So, okay, story number two. I'll take that one. I first saw this with totally blanking on this one. The Gun Collective. I don't know if any of you guys are familiar with them. It's John Patton out of Pennsylvania, and his friend, his lawyer friend, I forgot his name. Sorry, I think his name's John. I don't know. He's running for the board of NRA directors. But whatever the case is, the NFA industry CEOs worked with the ATF to streamline the Form 4 application process. So this is for our American listeners. Firearms industry representatives met with members of the ATF in Washington, D.C., to confirm the adoption of an industry development processing technology designed to streamline the current NFA transfer system. Several weeks ago, a working group of industrial representatives, including the CEOs of Dead Air Silencers, Gemtech, Silencer Shop, plus several senior ATF representatives, successfully piloted and tested a new barcode system and form generator, which grossly reduces data entry processing delays and provides virtual error-free data exchange between dealers and NFA processing center. So this, I was going to mention this also before, Thomas, as one of the reasons why there's going to be a drop in NICS checks and stuff, because so many people are waiting on the
Hearing Protection Act.
Hearing Protection Act, exactly. They're waiting to. So a lot of people have like point blank stopped putting in applications and stuff. And another reason is you have like wait times that go. When I was watching the video, anywhere from 8 months to a year to get your to get your application back, which. We're complaining in Ontario for transfers taking a month. So, yeah. So back to the story. The new barcode system has been approved to take immediate effect. ATF already acquired the system's hardware, and the form generating system is accessible on the representative manufacturer's website at this time, and can be made available at no cost to any other interested industry members. The system can be used by dealers to generate barcodes, Form 4, for the transfer of any NFA product. Here's how it works. A dealer simply logs on to any participating industry member's website, including the respective websites for Dead Air, Gemtech, or Silencer Shop, to complete a customer's Form 4 using the form generator. The form generator pulls data from several different data sources and auto-populates the correct FFL number, address, etc., without additional input from the dealer. The buyer's information and product information are then entered by the dealer, and the form is printed. The printed copy will feature a 2D barcode on the ATF's copy of the generation forms. All of the information contained in the Form 4 is encapsulated in the barcode itself. None of this information is transmitted, saved, or otherwise accessible to any of the supporting industry members. Once the barcode is formed, it is received by the NFA Processing Center. It is scanned into the ATF system. This new process requires only seconds and has virtually no error rate. In adopting the new system, ATF will have cut significant resources typically required for data entry that can be focused on other parts of the NFA process. Form prevention spent anywhere from a couple of weeks to several months waiting for data entry. The new barcode system will benefit both ATF processing and customer wait times without requiring additional manpower or substantial hardware upgrades. The addition of this new system will not have been possible but for the assistance and cooperation of the ATF. Accordingly, the industry representatives involved would like to extend a special thanks to the ATF for their hard work and effort in making the new system a reality. Apparently, as mentioned in the Gun Collective video, they had an error rate of like 50%. So like data was being put into the system and it would be wrong half the time, and that would cause extra delays because they're having all this wrong information put in. So this is supposed to not only speed it up because you have an automatic input of data, but you're also having the correct data put in. So they should see apparently a huge drop in wait times. So yeah, it's nice to see the people who are manning the reins actually want to make things go faster or easier, like say the ATF. Say for example, the CFOs decided, you know, all we really have to do is, you know, do both these people have valid licenses and they haven't come up in you know, haven't had an altercation in the last 24 hours, then they're good, and then they just change the name on the registration. But apparently they don't know how to do that. They're making it more complicated than it needs to be.
Sounds like the ATF.
Well, like that, someone posted this on Reddit, and I meant to look at it. I never got around to it. But someone posted what the CFO claims they have to do in order to, approve a transfer. And it seems like they have to do a background check on both the buyer and the seller before they can approve the transfer. But if our system is working the way it's supposed to, all they should really be doing is seeing if their license is still valid, and then approve the transfer. Because if we've committed a crime, within the next 24 hours, someone's notified and we should be reprimanded and there should be a note put in our license. So there should be no real need for an additional background check.
I didn't realize they did a background check for every transfer.
Well, that's what someone wrote on Reddit. I don't know how accurate that information was. And also it's coming from memory, so it's really inaccurate what I'm saying. But it's like a third party source.
Because it's funny because business transfers...
There's no reason for it.
Yeah, it explains why business transfers are so much faster than private transfers.
Yeah, because it makes sense that people are buying, they're selling their gun. That's what their business is for. It's just the buyer that they have to check on.
Well, I look like a suspicious looking character, so they probably check me out anytime anyway.
Well, like my first time when I bought my Jericho, that transfer took maybe a month. And, you know, when I called up the SFRC and I was like, hey, what's going on? They're like, well, have you ever bought a restricted before? And I was like, no. They're like, oh, that's probably why it's taking so long. It's your first restricted. But then again, you know, it could always just be Ontario.
It's funny. I've had them whenever people are taking vacations, like around the holidays, Christmas time, I've noticed as long as you purchase something before the end of November, you usually will get it within a week. If you try to get something before the holiday, a couple of weeks before Christmas, you're not getting it for a month, because I think the staff take holidays. They just don't process them because there's nobody there. Same in the summertime. July and August, I find they slow down because that's when the staff take holidays.
Yep.
So don't buy a gun in the summertime or around a holiday.
Yeah, well, especially restricted. If you want something for Hanukkah or Christmas, don't wait till a week or two before the holiday. Put it in at least a month before to get it on time. That's just been my experience. So I make sure Terry gets it at least a month before the holidays. I whine a lot before. It works. Except the latest thing I've been looking at, I don't think she'll let me buy.
Oh, why would you like
that? Well, it's what's new in the industry. I really like this. This is sweet.
So what's new in the industry?
When we're doing the lever actions, I was looking at a lot of the different lever actions, and Chiapa has this one that I really like. It puts the ranch hand to shame. It's called the Alaskan, and what it is an 1892 lever action designed specifically for hunting. It's a chromed 6.5-pound takedown rifle, large loop chambered in 44 magnum with a 12-inch barrel, and it was specifically designed to be used with the Hornady Lever Revolution ammunition. And the action's actually been specifically tuned for that particular round. The adjustable Skinner sights are milled from a solid single piece of aluminum. The stock and forend are made with walnut, but they also have a covering of over-molded rubber, like a soft touch finish, with a big comfortable butt stab, and it's got an anti-shock shock absorber recoil pad in it. The problem is it's a custom order gun. Lead time is 120 days plus, and it's also available from Taylor Creek is one of their branded guns, but the price on it is $1,460 US. I know Wenstahl's ordered about 10 of them a couple of years ago, and they got picked up so fast. And it's this beautiful little short-barreled 44 magnum lever action with a huge large loop lever and a side a case for like a backpack. It looks sweet.
It looks really nice.
I liked my ranch hand, but it was brutal to shoot.
Couldn't you put a proper stock on it, or no?
That's what I thought. I thought about getting a nice stock on it, but I've already got an 1894 and 44 magnum, and it's a sweet shooting rifle, but it's got a I'm not sure if it's an 18. I think it's an 18.5-inch barrel on that, not a 16. But you know, it's kind of heavy and clunky. This thing's got the slimmer, smoother. I like the Winchester 1892 action. It's not really conducive to putting optics, but the way they have the sights on it, this would be a really good backpacking rifle if you're in grizzly territory or something you just wanted to have sling over your back and pull out quickly and use.
Yeah, it definitely looks good.
But we're talking probably close to $2,000 by the time you get it up here.
Yep. Yeah, I agree with that.
Because I think the price they had on them a couple of years ago was 16. It was 2014. It was $1,600. So add the currency. That's the currency change. And yeah, I'm probably 18, 19 plus tax. But it looks like a tank. It looks very well made.
Yep. And then, you're looking at 18.5 probably, and then plus tax, so you're gonna that's gonna throw you for a major loop.
Well, it's kind of cool because it's got an octagon barrel too, so you don't really see too many cutback lever actions with octagon barrels that are 12 inches and chrome plated. It looks sort of modern and sort of old fashioned at the same time, sort of like me.
Yeah, I was gonna say it doesn't have the wood and the bloom, well, but it still looks.
It does have the wood. It is walnut, but it's coated with the this rubber texturing on it, so at least that'll protect your wood.
Yeah, but what's the point of the wood if you can't see it?
It's true. Well, yeah. The point of the wood is the weight. Because if it was a synthetic stock, it'd be really light and flimsy, and the 44 is kind of peppy. But with the wood on it, you've got the extra weight, a little more stability. I don't know. I liked it. It's not everybody's thing, but for a pack rifle, it'd be cool.
I think it looks great. I'd love to try one out.
I don't think it would fly with a wife, but
That's why I said try. So you know, if Chiapa, if you want to send a rifle down here, I'm more than happy to try it out for you.
We just might take a while getting it back to you. That's all.
It's got to make its rounds.
Well, you know what they do nowadays. A lot of the industry people is that. Guys are so slow at returning stuff. They include they want your credit card number, and you've got. They say, okay, you have it for 90 days, And if you don't return it after 90 days, they bill you for the firearm now.
I'm always hesitant, even if like people are like, oh, it's free. We just need your credit card number.
Yeah, because if you don't return it, you bought it.
Review of the X2 RP Taco Molly. So the HSGI triple stack taco mag pouch thingy. Shooting mostly from a bench at the range, I never had the need for to carry magazines, except for when I was in the Army. So after signing up for the Ragnarok Carbine Operator course, I knew I would need something better than my pockets. Still being some months away, I didn't think of it much until I got an email from DeVore.com advertising their deals on HSGI pouches. I decided to take a look. After pursuing all the perusing all the options, I went for the X2 RP Taco because for a couple more dollars, I could get a whole extra mag. And more is better, right? More on this later. After ordering the pouches and my LBX tactical soldier's belt, I was ready for the course. Installing them wasn't too hard. I found it when you use a pen or a screwdriver, it makes the already easy process that much easier. HSGI advertises their mag pouches as holding USGI, HK, PMAG, ARC, FAL, AK 30 and 40, LAR 20, and M14 magazines securely. I can add a pair of LAR 15 held together with the Caldwell AR 15 magazine coupler to the list. I did try using some cardboard folded into a triangle with the base facing up and found that this did an okay job of holding a single LAR mag in place so you can reach it, but some might still find it lacking in real estate. The pistol pouches are the same design, and I have yet to see a pistol mag that doesn't look like it will fit. The pistol pouches also double as utility pouches for knives, lights, knives, batteries, or anything else that shape. I found the retention good. I haven't lost the magazine while running around or even throwing my belt around. Even when switching between using USGI and LARs, the pouches did the job. The bungee wrapped around the pouches added enough variation in retention that no matter the size of your mags, you can get the retention you want. With an injection molded polymer frame, the pouches still hold their shape even when empty and make mag retention easy, especially if you don't have a dump pouch yet. I've heard of people complaining about how with no top retention device, you can still lose a magazine. HSGI has placed convenient loops at the top of the pouches that are perfect candidates for bungee retainers. Other than that, I haven't experienced or heard anything bad about these pouches. One thing I can say is, if you use the X2 RP tacos, mount them on a thigh rig. Only after I ordered them did I think of how far out they would hang. The truth is, they don't hang out that far. But any future purchases will be either the double decker taco or the X2R taco, and any extra magazines I need will be carried in a different system.
So these mount to your chest rig?
So these mount to chest rig, belt, or thigh rig. It just mounts to Molly, so anywhere you can put Molly, you can put them. So if you want to put it on your helmet, you can put it on your helmet. Although I don't think they have helmets with Molly yet.
So Molly's just Velcros, isn't it?
No, it's more of a loop system developed. It's like this crazy system. It's basically just I think Cordura or webbing that's I think it's like 1 inch wide, like the amount of space between the stitching is 1 inch. So you just like mate two pieces up, you'll stick what they have is their clips, whatever, which is basically a folded piece of plastic with an eye and a hole thingy to punch through, holds it in place. Yeah, and it just basically you just weave it in and clip it together, and they're stuck there forever.
Okay, and you said more on that later. What was that referring to?
Oh, the more is better. So I thought, you know, having the extra pouch, the extra, you know, mag capacity would be better, but it sticks out a little bit. It's not so much, but it's worthwhile to keep in mind if you're, you know, walking through doorways or whatever to you do a more minimalized feel or look.
So if you have a drop leg holster, can you attach this to the holster as well too, if it's got the Molly?
Yeah, so that's what I saw. Tyler from Liberty or Death podcast, he was on the range, he had these and he had them attached to a leg holster. He had just I think single mag pouches on his chest rig, but on his thigh rig he had these mags attached, these pouches attached.
Sounds interesting. What do they retail for?
They retail for about somewhere between, depending where you are. Like I think I paid somewhere between $30 and $45 for them, depending on what exactly which pouch you end up getting. U.S. You can get them at Ragnarok Tactical Shop, but I got them from Devor just because they seem cheaper there. But I don't think I really got that much of a better, excuse me, of a deal.
Now, if you're going to take the Ragnarok course, how many of these holders do you think you'd need?
So you really only need, I think they say you should really have three. So if you really need, you can go, like, HSGI has a whole bunch of different setups. So, like, you can have, like, the ones I bought, which are the X2RP, whatever they are. They have two rifle mags and one pistol mag as one set. Now, you can buy three rifle mags that are, instead of one on top of the other, they're next to each other with pistol carriers in front, which is their double-decker taco, just three of them put together. You can get that and put that on your rig, and that will be more than enough for the Ragnarok course.
Okay. I still got to get a chest rig. I don't have one yet.
Yeah. Most people say, or not most people, Ragnarok's idea is that belt from the belt is faster. Chest is your second line of what you need. So probably better go for a battle belt first. They tend to be a little bit cheaper, and you can pay about the same amount and get as a battle belt and get much better quality than if you paid less for, sorry, pay the same for a battle belt as a chest rig. But you'll get a much better quality than if you paid a less for a chest rig. Pay more, get a battle belt. And then if you think you want it, go for the chest rig later, but first go for the battle belt.
So the battle belt, is that similar to, say, my rig for Ipsic, where I've got the inner Velcro and the outer belt?
Right. So if you look at the belts we looked at with Parsec Aware, his outer belt has those loops on it. That's Molly, and that's what you detach your pouches to.
So that's like his belt would be like a double use system. You could use it for the Ragnarok course, or you could also use it for Ipsic as well, too, because it has both retention points.
Right, right. So you could, depending on how you set up your belt, and if you say you had a double alpha outer belt and the Parsec Aware inner belt and Assaulter and his Molly belt, you could switch between Ipsic and, you know, your tactical course if you wanted and still be stylish at the same time.
Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
It's all about styling.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely true.
You haven't seen style till you see pictures of Crystal Power shooting. She blings out everything. I haven't met her yet, but she seems like a sweet, sweet lady. She's a rhinestones. She shoots what does she shoot? She no longer shoots CZ. She shoots a Grand Power Excalibur, and all her mag pouches have U shaped rhinestones. So nothing. Each mag pouch is all covered in rhinestones. Her holster is all covered in rhinestones. I mean, this girl in the sunlight, she'll blind you. She's got so much bling on her holster. She's got style. Sorry, Crystal, but it's meant as a compliment.
So that brings us to
events. Event. Thomas, you want to take event number one?
Oh, I can't read this thing. Can you blow it up?
Event number one, the Karmarama Canadian History Arms Museum. This is shared to us by Sarah Miller from Lanzalone. It's going to take place at the Knights of Columbus Hall at 33 Speedville Road, Cambridge, Ontario. It's going to be on Saturday, September 9th at 7 o'clock, and it goes all the way till 10 o'clock.
That's midnight. Right?
No, that's midnight. Never mind. And it's going to be in 3 weeks. So.
And that's actually Sarah, the owner of Lance Shooting Supplies.
Right, right. So I guess you should look into that. George, you want to take the next event?
Yeah. I just blew up the picture. For tickets or more information, contact Danielle at danielle@canadianarms.ca.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Since Thomas is the one that put it in there. Can't even read what he put in there.
I don't have my old man glasses on. I can't see it.
Old man glasses. You make it too easy. Florenceville Shooting Sports Club 2017 annual fundraiser draw. There's only going to be 400 tickets being, or there's only 400 tickets being sold. $20 per ticket. First place is a Tika T3 shooter, bolt action 223 Remington. I'm assuming that's first place. Anyways, you can win a Henry 22 long rifle lever action.
Lever.
Be a lever. Ticket locations, Great Diamond Outfitters in Woodstock, this is a New Brunswick thing.
Yeah, but there's an email you can send it to.
I'm getting to it. Hold on to your granny panties.
I got them.
Curry's Ace Hardware, Woodstock, New Brunswick, or by EMT, and the email address is contactus.fssc@gmail.com. Links in the show notes. All right. I'm not lead host, so I'll kick it back to Benny.
Listener email, as of now, we have nothing. Please send any feedback, questions, or comments you may have, or comebacks, to host@newshootercanada.ca, our Facebook page, or in our comment section on our website, at newshootercanada.ca. We would love to hear from you. iTunes, as of now, nothing, but I didn't check. Did any of you guys check?
No.
So that is not changed. Facebook likes, 1,144, so that's climbing, that's good. Thomas, you want to tell us a quote of the week?
Thomas?
Chirp.
Yes, I know. I coughed and I hit the mute button, I forgot to turn it back on. Closing comments, actually. Andrew from Canadian Gunworks actually messaged me a couple weeks ago, and he asked me if I had any pictures of my XCal barrel that he plated at the charity shoot a couple years ago. So I took a bunch of pictures, and he just posted something up on his Facebook page, and he put some fancy AF titanium carbon nitride that we did for a major motion picture. Apparently a production company came in and they ordered 10 XCals, the Grand Power Excalibur, to be used in his movie guns. And so he puts, I sent him all my pictures, and he put a picture up of six XCal barrels that he did, which is fine. But you got to remember, those pictures and those guns are now movie props, and Ground Power has stated that aftermarket treatment invalidates your warranty if the gun fails. So when I did my XCal barrel and treated it with a titanium nitride, which is a different coating, last year, my gun was out of warranty at the time, and I knew that treating my barrel would void the warranty, and Ground Power did not approve of my barrel treatment when he saw my XCal. Yeah, another thing you have to remember too is that the coating that he put on these things is an 86 or an 87 on the Rockwell scale. So it's hard. It's really, really hard. So if you've got a moving part that hasn't been treated and you're rubbing this against it, you could do some damage. So remember that Cerakoting the outside of your gun finish should not affect the manufacturer's warranty, but on any modification that you do to the gun itself could void your warranty. And this may include coating your action bars, your barrel, your hammer, your sear, and your bolt, aftermarket internal parts that you put on, or even bedding the stock, or drilling a cleaning hole in the receiver of your 1022 could void your warranty. So remember, if you change any part of your gun and you have to send it in for warranty work, make sure that you return the gun in its originally factory condition. And when you put it back together, test fire it, because maybe it was parts that you put in that were causing the issue. Especially for Ruger. We're talking about how good Ruger's customer service is. I know people that have blown up Rugers. There's extruption or something in the barrel. They sent the gun back to Ruger. Ruger repaired the barrel, no charge. They fixed it, no questions asked. But they also removed all the aftermarket parts that were inside. They took out the hammer, the sear, and they put in factory parts. And they returned it to him in original factory condition. So another good example, Tony, the CCSA, I was speaking to him a couple of years ago, Tony Bernardo, he had a Remington gun that was giving him nothing but problems. So he decided to bed the action. And he sent it back to Remington with the action that he bedded, and they returned it to him and refused to do any warranty work on it because he'd voided the warranty by bedding the action. So be careful if you're going to start doing work on a gun and you need warranty repair, just be careful what you do.
Okay, I got a quick question. For those that may not know, what does bedding your action?
Well, for example, you don't want your barrel to actually contact the stock. You want it free floated, because when you take a shot, the barrel resonates, it vibrates at a certain, the harmonics of each one's different. And if you interfere with the harmonics, it could actually throw your shot off. So a lot of times they'll just actually bed the action down to the stock. So if you look, say, for example, in Stan, Benny's dad's rifle, his Ruger American, they actually have aluminum bedding blocks inside the stock of the rifle. So it squishes it right down. So at no point should the barrel contact the stock along the way. I actually looked at Benny's, at the Stan's gun, and it was free floated all the way around the front, except the very front of a stock is resting on the barrel. So if that was my gun, I would actually just take a little bit of sandpaper and just smooth that out and get rid of that contact, so the barrel does become free floated.
And that's what that would be called bedding it?
Well, it's not bedded. It'll actually, some rifles will actually just be glued, or you're just screwed right into the wood. And it's, so you actually want to bring the action up just a little bit and secure the action to the stock, securing it to the stock.
But doing that, Thomas, you're going to kill all my the previous barrel harmonics, and now this gun won't shoot the same it did before.
It's possible. I've seen people complain about the barrel bands in 1022s and take the barrel bands off because they're saying that it interfered with it. But I took my barrel band off, and I took some sandpaper to the inside of the stock and made a nice little channel so it wasn't touching it, and it didn't affect my groups at all. It shot the same with the barrel band. But that's a 22. When you get into high-powered rifles, it could be a different thing altogether. Another example is Browning has an adjustable muzzle brake, and you can actually tune the muzzle brake and dial it in. And what Ruger did with their Mini 14 or the Ranch rifle, they actually have a harmonic stabilizer bar on the front, so you can actually move it back and forth to fine tune the harmonics of that barrel to make it shoot more accurately. So
that's interesting.
Because the Ranch rifle, or the Mini 14, was notorious for not being that accurate compared to an AR. So they came up with a target version, and that's what they put. They put some type of barrel harmonic stabilizer on the front. My friend Gary has one, and it made quite a difference. His Mini 14 is very accurate. So
yeah, I was going to say, I recently heard that they're apparently not a very accurate rifle, which I didn't know. So
there's all kinds of tricks you can do to try to squeeze every bit of accuracy out of a gun. That's why when you buy, like, say, the Ruger Precision, it already comes breaded. It always comes free floated. It's geared towards precision. But there's all little kind of tricks that you can do along the way to just improve the accuracy that's already there. Not like I have any rifles like that.
Yours are all tricked out to the max already.
Even my Marlin XT22, when it came, it was free floated, so I didn't worry about it. And the Savage Axis, it's actually free-floated too. I don't see the barrel contacting the stock at all. And then I think that gun cost me $400. And with the right ammunition, it'll shoot under a minute of angle all day.
Yeah, Savage did a good job.
I'd like to spend some more time with your dad's Ruger American. I really like that rifle. I was really impressed with the quality. The bluing on it, like from a Ruger product, I was really impressed. I mean, it had beautiful bluing on it. And had a nice trigger.
Yeah, and it hasn't been adjusted at all.
No, not at all. But yeah. I bet you if your dad took a little bit of material off that front forearm where it is touching, I bet you it would tighten up the accuracy on that a little bit.
Maybe then it could even compete with your 1022.
It definitely could.
Yeah, because as of right now, it's not. Your 1022s are doing better. Remember, well, I put them up against each other with the same ammo. The cheap bucket stuff, which, by the way, was on sale. As of when our listeners hear this, it's not going to be on sale anymore, but Cabela's had it on sale for $89.99, I think. But with taxes and shipping and everything, it was like $120, so I dropped that one.
Yeah, you could definitely see the accuracy difference between the two guns.
Yeah,
but I bet you get rid of some of that tension at the tip of the forestock. And it depends on the ammo, too. You're using the same ammo in my gun, too?
Yeah, I was using the same ammo.
You should see that gun with the Aguila High Speed. It'll put everything indoors at 23 yards. The bullet will go through the same hole too. But you got to look at the optics too. My scope is 24 power, and it's got fine crosshair, so you can actually see the target. But with your dad's, you put his full power, that mil dot actually covers the target. I found I had a hard time because I shot a few rounds out of his rifle, and I love the trigger. But I found he was using those black impact targets where you can see it.
Yep.
I couldn't really place my dot on the target because I couldn't see the dot. Black on black is very difficult to pick out.
I think that was a, that was a you, Thomas. That was a Thomas, an old I Thomas thing, I think, because I was okay with
it. Even black on black, like if I'm doing accuracy, like what I did lately, my X-Cal was already usually put for 6 o'clock hold because I was doing it for precision shooting. But that's stupid for if you're doing competition because you want point of aim. If I'm aiming at a hostage target or if I'm aiming at a small gong, I want to be able to aim at the bottom of the gong and hit the target. I won't have to purposely aim lower to shoot higher. So, and I found, especially with the, it's not as bad with the ground power, the X-Cal, because it's got the fiber optic front sight. But if you line your sights up center of target, black on black, nobody can see them. I find I can't. Then maybe right, maybe it's my eyes. But no, black on black, I have a hard time. That's why I got the scope that I did, because the reticle, I can light up the mil dots. So if I've got a black target, I can make the center of the target red or green, depending on where I'm outside.
It definitely,
so I can see the target and I can see my sights at the same time.
It definitely would be easier with a different color reticle, you're right.
It would make a difference.
Yeah. So, George, shout-outs?
Shout-out to my buddy Terry. He drove all the way from Saskatchewan just to visit me and to go shooting with me.
Aww.
When are you guys going shooting?
That's not entirely true. But he did drive in from Saskatchewan, and we are going shooting on Tuesday. But I think he came more to visit his family that's here than to visit me. But
is he staying in London?
Yeah. Yeah, he's from London. Him and his wife went out west for holidays, loved it so much. He put in for a transfer with his work. The transfer got approved, and they moved out to Saskatchewan.
Oh, it's too bad he wasn't coming out here. I'd love to meet Terry. We've talked to him so many times on Facebook.
Well, come on down to London on Tuesday.
Yeah, that won't fly.
Why?
Because travel time alone would be about 4 hours there, 4 hours back. Just go shooting. You don't know my wife.
I hear a lot of cannots and not a lot of can do's.
Hey, George, where's your AR?
It's in my 24-foot.
It's in his boat. In his SS Minnow. Are you really making Wanda call you captain or skipper?
No, I'm making her call me captain. She's calling me skipper. I said to her, I said, listen, I got on the boat. We went up to the boat today, so I got on first, and I turned around and I said to her, you're not allowed on unless you say, captain, permission to come aboard. And then she just about threw everything in her arms at me.
You know, if the boat had the name Willow, I think you should change it. You should change the name to George's AR.
I can't, because it's bad luck to change, to rename a boat.
Yeah, sailors are a very superstitious bunch.
So, who am I to mess with superstition?
I'm not superstitious at all.
Neither am I. But I'm not going to rename the boat just because I'm fine with the name Willow. So that's my shout out to Terry for the long journey. Apparently, I didn't know this, but if you're just traveling through the U.S. from one part of Canada to another, you don't need a Form 6 NIA, apparently.
Yeah, that's a really new change. We covered that on the show.
Oh, well, because the show off and I listen to the show.
Oh, no, this is a long time ago. I wouldn't expect our listeners to remember this either.
Oh.
Well, okay. If you did remember, write into the show and tell me and prove me wrong.
No, we did. We actually, I think I put it in there, too.
I'm starting to doubt you listeners exist.
Yeah, yeah, now the hate mail comes in.
Well, that's fine. You know what happened? Any attention is good attention, huh?
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, so that was something I learned. I didn't realize you could do that, so.
Yeah.
That was cool. That's it for me.
Thomas?
Well, this week, to my lovely wife, Terry, happy anniversary. It's been 29 years that you put up with me, so.
Congratulations.
And you know what? I just remembered, I don't know if I'm going shooting tonight. I've got the gun beside me. Everything's ready to go. I figured, no, I think I should go spend some time with my wife.
Good idea, Thomas.
That would go much better tonight.
When's your actual anniversary?
Today?
Today's your August, actual
August 20th.
August 20th, yeah.
Well, that's
1987, 86, 87.
I was 10 years old. You were getting married, and I was barely turning 10. Actually, I was still 9, technically.
What? 29. Oh, 29. Okay.
You want to hear something worse?
Yeah.
Benny's dad, Stan, is only 4 years older than me.
How's that worse?
That just says that Benny's dad's old, too.
He looks a lot older than me, though. I got to say that. He definitely looks older than I do. Maybe it's the South African son for all those years. I don't know. Well, I asked him, I said, Stan, so how old are you? He goes, 61. I go, oh, my God. So you're only 4 years older. And most of my friends are half my age anyway, so. Because I look so young.
No, that's not it.
Oh, okay.
That's because they've started allowing you near playgrounds again.
That's nasty.
Oh, that's mean.
Yeah, maybe that was a little below the belt.
Actually, no, because you can't even smoke in playgrounds now. I walk the dog to the park every day, and there's all kinds of warnings that you can't smoke near the play. Yeah, so actually, no, I'm not allowed in the playground because I usually smoke when I walk the dog.
There you go.
Good recovery.
Good recovery. No.
I think not. I think I'll turn the fan on now.
Okay. I guess it's my turn. So, as usual, I'll shout out to my wife. But this week, it's something different.
Special shout out.
Shout out to MD for taking her PAL and RPAL course and passing with flying colors.
Excellent.
And dealing with me through the whole thing because I was not impressed with the course she took. They didn't talk about checking your magazine at all during the course. They for their PAL course, they didn't address removal magazines at all. All the firearms they had to play with and manipulate were like tubular magazines or hinge plate, so non-removable. They didn't talk about 22s at all. They really brushed over them in like a sentence or two. And I was just very surprised that they were doing this, and it seemed like they were very they were missing parts, and I felt like they were giving the wrong information. So
who was holding the course?
I don't know if I really want to dox them. I wasn't impressed.
Oh, okay. Well, that's understandable.
Yeah. So
Thomas yeah. has no problem shaming people on this show.
Not at all.
He's
kind of known for that. That's his thing.
Well, you know, I did the same thing with Terry because I had to go with her because you know, if people that know us, like Terry's in a wheelchair, so and she had the course at Durham College, so I just spent the day with her. And this is before the dog. And I sat in with a lot of the stuff because I had time to kill. And the funny part was I actually knew the instructor. He was my flight sergeant in the Air Cadets when I was like 14 years old. And I must say he did a very good job. There was only one thing I complained about, but everything else, I think he went through it pretty thoroughly. I was impressed with this course.
So I was just like, I just wasn't impressed with the, like, they ignored the whole detachable magazine thing. And that had me a little concerned, you know, because when MD came home and went to practice, you know, what do I have to practice with? I didn't pull out the Tavor. I just pulled out the Marlin 795 and the Uzcon. And I was like, you'd forgot to check the magazine. She's like, well, they didn't tell us we had to check the magazine. And I was like, well, that's really wrong. And I, you know, got upset. And then she, yeah, it didn't pan out well. But whatever. They didn't tell her to check the magazine. I was like, how do you not check the magazine? But whatever. Okay.
So the instructor probably didn't have any of those guns in his possession then.
I guess so. Well,
they're supposed to have
one of everything.
One of everything.
Yeah, so all they had were tube fed magazines or
internal magazines.
Or internal magazines. And that they didn't even discuss checking the magazine made me very unhappy. And then, you know, I don't know about everyone in the class, but she knows that she and someone else in the class got a question wrong because when they were taught what's your sight picture, the instructor, trying to obviously, you know, do the right thing and teach them to be safe, stressed, you know, your target and what's beyond it. But your sight picture is just your sights and the target. And so they all got that question wrong.
Well, that's not correct. Your sight picture is what you're actually looking at.
Right. So
you're lining up your sights on your target, your sight picture.
Right. So my issue with that is that the instructor passed on the wrong information. Yeah, I know the answer was wrong, but I feel like that was unfair, I guess.
Well, they should have reworded it so when you're acquiring your sight picture and getting ready to take your shot, you know, and at least have it so the answer would be of your target what lays on beyond. But just saying what's your sight picture, you know, when we teach somebody how to shoot, we explain what your sight picture is. When you're hunting, it's a different scenario, so that should have been a different question.
Right, but this was like I said, this was the RPAL course actually, and this they're let's be honest, they're teaching the course towards the test. They're not writing the test to the course they just taught. It's a standardized test. You know, you're teaching a standardized course. You know, have your information worded appropriately, and I feel like they didn't do that.
No, I agree. I agree, especially if I didn't realize it was restricted because you're gonna have your handgun, so you're gonna be at a range in a range facility shooting at an approved target, so it's not gonna be what your target what lays on beyond it because you're gonna have a backstop, you're gonna have a bunker or you're gonna have a berm.
Right. So that's my.
I'd be ticked too. I would say something.
So I wasn't happy, but whatever.
Well, she passed. That's the important thing.
She got him, right?
Yeah, she passed. So we're just waiting for her her stamp of approval from the Canadian CFO to say, hey, you actually, you know, you passed this test. I never understood that one. And then send it off to Miramichi and have Miramichi, you know, do all the background.
Well, what I did is that when you get your test results, I just send in my test results and my application all at once.
Right, right. That's what you – don't you have to get – you have to get it stamped first by the CFO, no?
I never did. I just once I had the test results that showed that I actually passed, I just mailed the that into directly to Miramichi.
Okay.
The same thing. You mail it in. They say, "Oh, thank you for mailing this in. We're gonna put it over here for 45 days, and then we're gonna open it."
Yeah, right. When you say 30, it's more like 45 days. They don't even look at it.
When I took it, they gave us. We got like the sheet back. We have to send it to. I think it's Aurora or whatever, to the Ontario CFO, where they put the official, you know, tri-leaf stamp on, and then you take that and you send that to Miramichi.
Oh, you know what? That might be right, because now that I think of it, when I did my course, I had to have a self-addressed envelope.
Right, and that's where they sent
way.
Yep.
That's right, too. I forgot about that.
Right, so that doesn't make sense to me either. You know, like what's going on in Ontario that's actually, like, you know, what's happening in that office that's, you know, officially happening that they can't do in Miramichi. I don't know. I feel like a lot of people are just double dipping.
Yeah.
Because it goes to Miramichi and they contact the individual offices for the background check anyway. So why would it go to the CFO first? The firearms program is federal. It's not provincial. It should go right to the federal office, in my opinion. The only time the CFO has anything to do with it is if you're going for restricted or for range approval. Everything else is federal.
Yeah, well, not anymore. The Canadian Firearm Safety Course is administrated by the province, not by the federal government. So
that's true.
If you want to become an instructor, that's what you have to do. You have to deal with their province. So.
And you know how much they charge for the instructor course?
No, please tell me.
$500.
Are you serious? Well,
that's and even if you're... They grace you with the opportunity and the pleasure of allowing you to take the course. When I called, the girl almost laughed at me.
Well, they weren't even accepting anybody to take the course until a couple months ago. They actually opened it up. And actually, I speak. Yeah.
No, it's what's it called? It's closed till fall of 2017.
Yeah. Now, the only thing I could do, I could probably really fight it because there's not one instructor that's listed as wheelchair accessible. I could put through a complaint. And actually, it was Piper from the Canadian Firearms Institute suggested it because she knows people do the course. And I said, you know, none of them are wheelchair accessible. I said, I've got a wheelchair accessible house. I said, I could teach anybody that's got a mobility issue. And I can complain that they didn't have anything accessible and I wanted an accessible course. And she said, I'd probably have a good chance of them forcing them to accept me.
I'll be more than happy to take that to help you do that, Thomas, if you need a assistant instructor.
Well, apparently what they have to do, the same person that gives you the course is not the person that tests you. They had somebody else test her, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. They did have a proctor come in.
Yeah, you have, it's two part.
Okay, Thomas, we got this. You call him and insist you need a wheelchair accessible location, and I'll be your assistant instructor. I'll be your proctor, and it'll all work out that way.
You know what? That's not a bad idea.
I'm trying to. I'm like got my finger on this button. I'm refreshing it every morning, trying to see if I can get the become an instructor. Because a lot of the response I was getting in my community was, "Oh, I would love to get my firearms license," and I'm like, "I can't help you."
So well, that would hopefully I'll be able that to. That would work both ways too. Because if you're holding courses, and you would need,
yeah, proctor exactly.
Proctor exactly too. Because there was cases where people, I remember way back when they started doing it, is that people were doing the test and then, or teaching the course, doing the test and passing the people. And there was instances where it wasn't on the level.
Yeah.
A couple of people got into a lot of trouble for actually basically giving the licenses away in the beginning. So I think that's why they did it to the two person. But yeah, I can, Piper mentioned to me last year, I can always get a hold of her and say, look, okay, I want to do it. But that means I got to get guns with no firing pins. I got to make some of my guns inactive. And I don't like that.
Do they have to be inactive, or can they just be...
No, they have to be
permanently made?
Well, no, they don't. They've changed the guidelines. They don't have to be deactivated, but they have to have be inoperable. Like, you have to have the firing pins removed. I do have an old Lee Enfield bolt action, and I do have an old Remington. It's a single action bar. It's really, really old. That's rotting away. I'm sure I could take the stock out of that. And I hate my Remington 597. I wouldn't mind taking the firing pin out of that. But I would still need a break action. Oh, I do have a single shot 12 gauge. But then, yeah, I have to take the firing pin out of it. So
it's an investment, Thomas. How much do people pay for courses in Bowmanville?
Well, there's a set fee that you can charge people.
I think it's different for every province, because in some provinces it's like...
No, it's set. There's a set fee.
Oh, yeah?
In Ontario, there's a set fee. You can't charge any more than a set fee. The only exception is if you take it through a college university. Because I think it was don't quote me. Last time I looked into it, it was $175 plus the book. I think the book was like $40. But if you take it at a college, I think Terry had to spend an extra $20 more because you're actually taking it at an institute. The advantage is if you take it at a college is that it's considered – you get an education certificate. That's an actual college course, and then you can apply that to your taxes.
Okay. Oh, wow. That's interesting.
And get $2 back on the extra $20 that you paid.
Yeah. I'm going to have to speak to my wife about this because I just clicked on courses and fees, and they're saying that if you take it within – include both tests and a minimum 12 hours of class instruction, if you do that, then it's only $260. I think we paid almost $300. I'll have to check on that.
Yeah, because there's different structures. Like you said, if you combine the two, you usually get a bit of a reduction on it.
Right, right. So.
Yeah, definitely. Sweeter try to get some money back if they overcharged her.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, like I said, I'm not. We'll see how this works out. If I'm not impressed, I will definitely tell our listeners don't use these people.
Yeah, you gotta watch out for them Gentiles.
Wow, George. Wow.
This is coming from Gentile George, right? Well, you can actually go on. There's a website. You just type in 905-416 fire instructors, and it'll. I think it's called it's Fresco. I believe is the acronym for it.
FSESO.org.
And it has a list.
Instructor.
It's got a list of all the instructors in the province, so you can find somebody that teaches either restricted or non-restricted that's closer to you.
In your language.
Yeah, that too now.
Yep.
Now that we scrolled away, we're glad that MD got both repelled.
So until next time, keep your barrels pointed downrange and smoking.
Take your kids shooting.
It's not about the stakes, it's about the odds. No, it's not. It's about the stakes, not the odds. I don't
keep
know.
Keep George
I'm so
away
tired.
From the playground.
What? That was a rip on you, not me.
Oh. Until next week, thanks for listening once again.
Yeah.
Until next week.
Cheerios.
Well, I really like 22 Mag.
Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you with any questions or feedback you may have, or if you just want to call shenanigans. You can contact us at host@newshootercanada.ca or through our Facebook page.
The way they look, I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small, they're for sale until I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns.
Do you want to do that again?
I don't know.
No, that was good enough.
Okay.
It's a George edit job.
George, if you want to just like do our takeout lines for us at the end and just splice that in for us, that'd be okay.
Yeah, we'd be happy with that. Okay, once he edits all this stuff out.
Oh, please do. I'd say probably from like 1:30 to 1:37.
Yeah, that's about good.